Welcome to Spirits Podcast, a drunken dive into myths and legends. Every week we pour a drink and learn about a new story from around the world. I am Amanda.
I am Julia.
And this is episode 72, Lord of the Rings with Emma Scherzarko.
Yeah, I really, really liked this episode, actually. I thought I knew a lot about Lord of the Rings. I do not know a lot about Lord of the Rings.
I thought I knew a normal amount about Lord of the Rings. Turns out I know nothing.
Yeah, apparently I know nothing. And it's wonderful because Emma does an amazing job explaining it to us.
Yes, we recorded this an embarrassing number of months ago with her, which is why you're going to hear us talk about how hot it is.
She was in town to record the Wolf 359 finale. That's how long it's been.
Which, you know, you can now binge that. So you're welcome. It's a great podcast.
You're welcome. Speaking of which, you might recognize Emma as the voice of Commander Minkowski, who is wonderful and an amazing human being. And I would marry her if I could marry fictional characters.
And Emma also now hosts a podcast called Pairing, where she pairs wine with art and culture. And it is absolutely delightful. And if you like the show, you're going to like that one.
Yeah. And the reason that she is so qualified for pairing wine with art and culture is because she is sommelier. And she talks a little bit about that in this episode.
So we are really stoked to get there. But first, we would like to thank our newest patrons, Ashley, Jesse, 1159 to Midnight, which is a great name, Jeremy, Miriam, and Danielle. Welcome.
Yes. And thank you, as always, to our supporting patrons, Neil, Philip, Julie, Sarah, Christina, Josh, Eeyore, Maria, Cami, Lindsay, Ryan, Lynn, Mercedes, Phil, and Deborah.
As well as our legend level patrons who are getting a very special boozy related package next week.
It's really cool.
Buggy, Rachel, Sandra, Ashley Marie, Leanne, Shannon, Cassie, and Ashley.
You guys definitely are descendant from cool boat seafaring elves. That's what I remember about this episode. Yep, checks out.
And when you're on your next boat journey, whether you're an elf or not,
okay,
you should download an Audible audiobook. They are our sponsor this week, and we're going to tell you about two fantastic books later in the episode. But for now, you can go to audible.com/spirits to start your free trial and redeem their offer for a free book, or text spirits to 500-500.
This week, we want to remind you, hey, our Patreon exists.
Patreon!
And we super want to go to Spaghetti Warehouse in Akron, Ohio.
We want to go to Akron. It is the time of year where it's actually okay to visit the Midwest.
Yes.
And I want to do it. I want to see Editor Eric. I want to go eat in the trolley.
Yes, I want to eat in the trolley too. And if you pledge just $1 an episode to our Patreon account, you make it easier for us to get to Akron, Ohio, which is a thing that I would never say in real life.
We are not that far away from this Patreon goal. So thank you so much to all of you who have supported us so far. And for those who are about to join, we salute you. That's a pop culture reference, I think.
About to die, but about to join is also good too.
Oh, okay. Well, we're also going to raise our glasses. So thank you so much again to everyone who listens, who supports, who recommends the show. And without further ado, enjoy Spirits Podcast episode 72, Lord of the Rings with Emma Scherzarko. So welcome to Spirits, someone whose voice we've been listening to for several years at this point and who is an incredible actress and has an actual book on our table, which we've never had before.
I don't think so.
Really? No one's brought a book to your table before?
Emma Scherzarko. Welcome
Hi,
to Spirits.
Thank you. Thank you. So I'm so thrilled to be here because I, as we were just saying, I am a recent Spirits convert aficionado. And so I'm so excited to be here and talking about my favorite nerdy thing. So
you're like a 5-year vintage instead of like the 25-year vintage or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Amanda,
I'm also sommelier.
That was points for
nice
for wine reference.
Did it.
I think you were just applying your whiskey knowledge to wine.
Yep,
that's exactly cool. Just checking.
Yeah. A 25-year vintage for wine is like pretty old.
Pretty good.
Yeah. It's very good.
I had a 1980 Opus at my uncle's house the other day.
Oh my God.
He's like, I got this. Your aunt gave this to me as a anniversary present back in 1980.
That's
amazing.
And I
just had this case for forever. I'm like,
that's amazing.
It was really fucking good.
There's a lot of people who come in because I work in a wine store, and there's a lot of people who come in and are like, I just had a baby. I want to buy a really good wine that's like current vintage so that I can give it to them in 21 years. And so that's
adorable.
Yeah, it's very cute and it's a great idea. So
wish my parents had that foresight.
Yeah,
I'm gonna do that.
They're just like, I have a baby, I can't right now with anything.
I mean, to be like, it's a it's sort of demonstrative of certain priorities, I think. The fact that, like, new parents are thinking about giving their children wine in 21 years.
Listen, my priorities always surround wine.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Me too. Me too.
Nonstop.
Love it.
So, Emma, what are you going to talk about?
So, I'm going to talk about Tolkien and the Silmarillion and the myths and legends of Middle Earth tonight.
I'm just, I'm fanning myself because I know we have plenty of fans who are interested in this topic. Also, I'm a little hot right now because
yes, it's also 80-something degrees. It's also hot, but it's also like, oh my God, Tolkien.
This is probably going to like air in the middle of winter and everyone's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. I'm like, right. Oh my God, it's so cold. Well, part of why I brought the book is because, as I believe it was George W. Bush said, the great thing about books is that sometimes they have pictures. And
I was like,
I was gonna say, this is also the first time anyone has quoted George W. Bush on our show.
Quoted on the show.
I'm not sure. Like, I don't know if he actually said that or not. I think somebody told me he said that one time. And I was
listen,
like, oh my God.
Headcanon accepted.
Also, yeah. We'll take any apocryphal story about George W. Bush
right,
on the show.
Right, exactly.
What a simpler those time, were, right, y'all?
Yeah, those seem like really wonderful times.
I know.
At this point.
Maybe that's a long con.
Yep. I love this edition of the Silmarillion because it's got this nice map of...
Maps.
So this is before Middle Earth. So the Silmarillion takes place during like the creation of time in Tolkien's world that he created and the first age of the world. The Lord of the Rings, which we're all a little more familiar with, takes place during the Third Age, if that gives it a little bit of context.
Like a millennia or two.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not too bad.
So,
throw in
so,
a couple centuries for change.
Exactly. Okay, so there's a few different ways I could talk about this, because there's like the whole creation myth aspect to the Silmarillion, and you kind of have to get through that. And it's a fantasy book, but it's written more like a history and or kind of like biblical text.
Right.
So it's tough to get through sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to read a lot of names and you have to like, luckily Christopher Tolkien, J.R. Tolkien's son, like has like little
gotcha.
References in the back. Otherwise
wow.
it would be totally impossible.
That's some like Norton Anthology of Poetry style end notes.
Totally. Well, it's also kind of like Game of Thrones, you know, like at the end of the Game of Thrones or the Song of Ice and Fire books, they have all the lists of the houses and everybody in the house.
Yeah.
It gets
After
really
reading
hard
the
to...
first book, I turned the last page, went right back to the first page and read it again.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, I know who everybody is now. This is helpful.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Which is why I encourage people to like
and
watch
is...
the show and then go for it.
So just to talk a little bit about Tolkien and his context, he was a philologist as well as an author. So I had to look this up. And
wait, can I guess?
Yes, please do.
Is it the history of
philosophy?
Either language, ideas, philosophy, or the shapehead thing.
It's very like it's very much that.
Okay.
That was throwing a lot of noodles at the wall.
It's,
there,
it's
my
sort
friend.
Of it's the study of the like theology, history, literature, linguistics of a culture.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's pretty so basically like everything about a culture. Because we know Tolkien as a linguist, definitely, and author. And that's, you know, like he created several languages for these books that he wrote. For me, growing up as a kid, you know, when I first read these books, this was the closest thing to religion that I ever had. Like, I loved these books so much. And like, you know, didn't necessarily, like, I didn't believe that they'd actually happened, but I like believed in the world that he created.
Yeah.
They're very special to me and hold a very dear place in my heart, as I know they do for many, many people. So anyway, so there's the creation of the world. And then it's kind of boring. And then
like the Bible.
Yeah, it's like in the way that the Bible is both beautiful and interesting and boring. So there's a fair amount of that in this book. But then once the elves come into the picture.
Nice.
That's when things get
That's when things get crazy.
I love
it. Actually do. So I guess maybe the easiest way to talk about it is just to like give a little brief overview of what you get when you, what you're getting into when you read the Silmarillion.
Do it up.
So the first part of the book, which is not technically part of the Silmarillion, is called Ainu Lindale. So in Tolkien's language, Ainu Lindale means the music of the Ainur. What I find very, very interesting about Tolkien's kind of theology that, or like the religion that he created around his world is that it's both monotheistic and polytheistic.
Tell me more.
So, there is the one god. His name is Eru, or Iluvatar, as he's called later by the elves.
I'm sorry, Louis Vuitton?
Louis Vuitton. God Louis Vuitton. Louis Vuitton.
Because why Vuitton. Give a person one name when you can give them 14?
So anyway, so what I love about this is basically Eru, who's the one god in this world, mm-hmm. who's here for the first part and then not really for the rest of the book.
Clockmaker god syndrome.
Yep.
Totally. He creates the world by creating music. And so he's got kind of all his angels, which essentially angels, who are called the Ainur, and they all create music together, and that music creates the world.
Cool.
I like it.
Yeah. So the wine that we're drinking, part of the reason why I chose it is because it has a music note.
It is a very good wine,
and
listener.
It's very tasty. He has all of his angels create this music. The Ainur create this music that creates the world, essentially. But there's this one guy. Melkor.
That one guy.
Ugh, Melkor's the worst. He decides right from the get-go, he's like, nah, I don't like this. I want to create a dissonant theme to the music of Iluvatar. And so Melkor, of course, ends up being kind of like the devil figure. He's pre-Sauron. Mm. So if you know Lord of the Rings, if you've seen it, you know, Sauron's the Dark Lord. He's the big bad. Okay, so Melkor creates this dissonant theme. Iluvatar is basic. Eru is kind of like, you know what? It's all part of my design. Now I'm going to send a bunch of my angels, my Ainur, down to Earth to kind of create it and make it ready for my children. So the children of Iluvatar are the elves and the men. And they're going to wake up at different times.
I feel like the dwarves got a bad rep here.
Well, okay, so I'll talk about the dwarves.
Sorry,
in a minute.
I just my thought was, put the dwarves.
This is one of my favorite parts of the story. And so this is where it becomes polytheistic.
Okay.
So it starts out kind of like, okay, there's God, he creates everything.
Yeah.
Cool. Once he sends his minions down to kind of take care of the world and make the world ready, then we're looking at the Valar, or the Valar, who become kind of the gods. And you definitely see influence from Greek myths, Norse myths, in many of these gods. The Valar get sent down to Earth, essentially, is what it is. Or Middle Earth. It's called Arda. So the main gods are Manwë's, like, the head honcho. He's kind of Zeus-like. You know, he's the god of the skies. Mm-hmm.
He sleeps with everybody.
He doesn't. There's not a lot of sex in Tolkien.
That's good.
Yeah. His wife, his mate, I guess, is Varda. And she's actually talked about way more in The Lord of the Rings, because the elves worship her above all others because she's kind of like the goddess of the stars.
Good job, elves.
Right? Sounds right.
Good job, elves.
Sounds right.
Totes. Okay, so anyway, so there's Manwë and Varda, and they kind of live up on a mountain, kind of like Olympus.
Nice. Yep. Nice.
It's called Tiniquetil. They live in the Holy Land, which is called Aman, and the city of Valinor is where. So in The Lord of the Rings, you hear a little bit about Valinor. And that's what they're talking about. That's where the gods live. It's kind of Asgardian a little bit, but not like a planet, but not like a world.
Gotcha.
But just like an island.
Gotcha. It's kind of like Avalon.
Yeah, cool. Kind of. Cool. And
breaking out all the men.
Totally. Yeah, girl.
Like, damn, girl, I got that got one.
For sure.
Do you think that he was making all of the mythologies that he knew so much about better? Or was he kind of like, you guys don't even know how this could be, you know? And like remixing them in an interesting way.
So I've heard a lot of different things about what he thought about what he was doing. In the foreword to The Lord of the Rings, which I was reading recently, he writes that, you know, because in The Lord of the Rings, a lot of people say, oh, this is so clearly influenced by your experience in World War I.
All right, biographical scholars. Give it a second.
Yeah. And so basically what Tolkien says is, he's like, look, I didn't write anything to be like a direct allegory or analogy.
That was for C.S. Lewis, his student.
Exactly.
Oh, sick burn.
They were part of the Inklings, literary society in Oxford.
What a dream,
together.
Right? To get those guys drunk and just like fuck with them.
Oh my God. If I could go back in time.
Right?
Totally.
Meet me in Cambridge in 19...
Yeah.
Fucking whatever, 30.
Amanda's, yeah, it was the 30s and 40s.
Amanda's dreams is just to go back in history and join a bunch of societies.
Yeah. So anyway, so I feel like with Tolkien, like he wasn't purposefully trying to use anything like so directly. I think he was just sort of influenced by everything around him, which is why I think it's very interesting that he's got the one god, and then once you've got once creation's over, mm-hmm. you have the many gods. Mm-hmm. Like it turns from a very like Judeo-Christian kind of sounding myth into a more polytheistic kind of pagan kind of theology.
That's a really interesting transition just from a historical perspective, because usually it is the opposite.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so, you know, like the one god Eru, like he's mentioned periodically throughout the book, like he exists, mm-hmm. but the Valar are much more central players in right. the story.
So tell us how they come about and how they
So they're spirits who come down to Earth, and one of them is Melkor, this guy with the dissonant theme.
That douchebag.
I just keep picturing Melchior Gabor from
I know.
Like fucking of course. Is the one.
No, totally. I was like looking it up. I was like, did he name him Melkor? Like was that a reference to Melchior? Mm-hmm. Because there were many, like, historical Melchiors, and I don't think so. I think it was just, like, that's the name he chose.
And, like, Tolkien made up thousands of names.
At some point, some of them are going to have some analogs. And also, but the, like, really frustrating thing is that he often reuses names. And so, like,
no!
Celeborn is both the name of Galadriel's husband and the name of a tree. And, like, it's, you know, a very important tree, and, you know, it's, like...
I mean, it kind of makes sense just from a historical perspective. How many Jameses there are.
They're going to be Johns.
No, it's Daniels. That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're the Valar. There's Manwë, Varda, who are kind of like the sky gods. Then there's Aulë, and he's the one who's responsible for making the dwarves.
There we go.
Yes. That's so Aulë is kind of like the smith god. He's kind of like a Hephaestus.
Yeah. Aulë getting it done.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the only way that I'm going to be able to remember any of these names is to give them a really cute tagline.
Totally.
Like, I'm like getting it done.
That's how I got through learning wrestling names, Amanda.
That's amazing.
They all just became blah, blah, dad.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's the only reason that I know any of those wrestlers' names, Jules.
Money dad.
Shane McMahon. Yeah. Shane McMahon. Team Shane.
And so Aulë is married to Yavanna, who's kind of like the earth goddess. She's like Gaia. She's like, you know, she creates trees and plants.
Yavanna, get centered.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So Aulë at a certain point creates the dwarves because he's like, I can't wait for the elves and the men. Like, I can't wait.
Oh, so the dwarves predated the
elves and humans technically, but once he creates them, then Eru, the one god, is like, I didn't say you could do that. He's like, I didn't say you could do that. And Aulë was like, and this is very, I think this is very much kind of Abraham-esque, mm-hmm. but Aulë is ready to like smash the dwarves and kill
to
them.
Prove
and,
oh, no.
Yeah. Loyal. And Aero's like, no. It's cool. But you just have to put them to sleep until after the elves wake up.
Oh.
And
those elves getting preferential treatment over those dwarves.
I know. So much privilege. So Aulë creates the dwarves. Puts him back to sleep until such time as they can wake up again. But Yavanna's like, I don't really like this because the dwarves are like going to cut down the trees that I planted and they're going to keep destroying nature and that I created. And so she goes to Eru and is kind of like, I don't like this. And he's like, okay. What we'll do is we'll give your creations a voice as well. So those are the Ents. That we see in Lord of the Rings.
So the tree people?
Yeah, the tree people. I know. So I love that story. That's one of my favorite parts of the early part of the book is like, Aulë is like, I really want kids. And he creates his kids and Eru's like, not yet. And then Yavanna's like, I don't know if I like his kids. And so the god is like, well, I'll let you create your own kids that can kind of counter his kids. It's like it's just a funny, it's just like a funny story.
I'm just
like,
imagining this as a very dysfunctional family.
Yeah, yeah.
Where like the cousin you don't like has children. You're like, yeah. Well, we have to have kids now so that like these little fuckers don't mess with me.
Totally.
I was picturing like a bunch of false starts in a board game where everyone's like, oh my god, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
And then just like not yet.
You can't play that card until the third turn.
Why, mom?
There's two more important gods to talk about, and there or Valar. One is Ulmo, who's very much Poseidon. He's the god of the sea.
Sweet.
And he kind of plays a role more than any of the other gods in the story because he's the god of the sea, so he can kind of go to Arda or Beleriand, as it's called.
Oh, it's a physical island, so he can like
go
across those two like realms.
Exactly. Cool. So he kind of spends more time with elves and men during this during the story than any other.
That's super interesting because I don't think of the sea very often when I think of the
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Right.
So
it's very much like mountains, rocks, you know, under plains. The earth.
The sea is much more important in the Silmarillion.
Which makes sense because like that's more of like a primal humanity feature in terms of like things that are just elemental and important to us early. And then we get all caught up like making our own structures, civilizations, you know, adapting nature to our own purposes. And it makes sense that it would be less, I think, present.
And part of it is that like during this first early age of the world, like the elves and men are much more connected to Valinor and to the gods who live there.
Yeah,
yeah. Gotcha.
Like they're like real beings to them.
Sure.
While in the Lord of the Rings, it's more like their theoretical ideas. They exist, but they're more an idea than they are like a reality.
Yeah, wow. You move from that very much like anthropomorphic god to something a little bit more omniscient.
Though. Absolutely.
Theoretical. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So there's Ulmo, and then there's Mandos, who's very much kind of a Hades figure. He
sounds like a good Hades type name.
It is Mandos. Mandos. And Mandos guards the hall, the gates of the dead, essentially, of the Hall of the Dead. And he gives judgment in certain situations.
What would like an anti-judgmental death god look like?
An anti-judgmental?
Someone who's just like, you did okay, bud.
I feel like there wouldn't be one. They would just enter and it would be like a lack of judgment and a lack of God in that sense.
It would just be really good therapy.
Totally. So that actually leads me to the Vala that I am most interested in.
Whoa.
And her name is Nienna. And
good name.
It is a good name. And she's kind of just like the goddess of sorrow.
Aww.
And she, well, but not just sorrow, but it's like the goddess of empathy.
Like real sorrow. Yeah,
like real sorrow.
Wow.
And
I love that.
I love that. Like she's, and she's
Julia wants
so,
four of them right now.
I know. Like let's do that spinoff series. Like let's find out more about Nienna, the like goddess of empathy.
And oh my God. You know what? Like the fact that they come from music and create music in order to create the world, it makes so much sense to have a goddess that fits that category.
Absolutely.
Because someone who controls emotion and embodies emotion, that 100% fits with the world building that he establishes.
I love it.
Oh, yeah, me too. It's that. I reread this recently and I was just like, oh my God, yeah, because she's not very important to the like the story.
Sure.
But she's one of the most interesting creations that Tolkien made to me.
Hell yeah.
Amazing.
So those are the Valar. There's also the Maiar, who are kind of the spirits just below the Valar.
Okay.
One of those is Olorin, who again doesn't really factor into the Silmarillion, but that's Gandalf. Gandalf is totally kind of a god.
Amazing.
Isn't that awesome? The wizards are gods who kind of get sent to Earth in the third age
and become giant dorks.
Yep. Pretty
fair
much
enough.
And like to smoke dorks. Weed.
that good hobbit kush.
Yeah, for real. That
Amanda's blinking at me. Did you not know that he smokes weed in the books?
No.
Yeah.
Your love of the halfling's leaf has clearly slowed your mind.
That too,
because he's smoking mad weed, and then he like makes weird smoke rings where they're not smoke rings, they're like ships and shit that he could just blow out.
Yeah, but he's totally beautiful. Smoking weed.
Yeah,
cool.
In character,
in
420
character.
Blaze it
for sure.
Dash Gandalf.
Okay, so the gods come down. Melkor is like, I'm gonna destroy whatever you create, and they're like, you know what? We put up with that for a while, but now we're gonna chain you. and like put you in prison so that you don't destroy the world.
Maybe
don't.
Fair. Maybe
but
they try
don't
not.
But they don't like banish him from the world. They just kind of chained him up for a while. Varda creates the stars, and that's when the elves wake up. So the elves are called the Eldar because they're the star people. Speaking of the moon, at this point in the history of time, in Tolkien's conception of it, the sun and the moon don't exist yet. But
that seems like a problem.
Yeah. But there are these two trees. So Yavanna, Earth Goddess, creates two trees, or she plants two trees and they grow and they sort of have the light of the sun and the moon before the sun and the moon exist. Oh. And so there's one, the sun one is called Lorelin and the moon one is called Telperion, I believe. And so Orome, the hunter god, he finds the elves and he brings them back. But not all of them want to go to Valinor. So some of them stay on Earth.
Huh. Okay.
And some of them go with him. And there's three kind of races of elves that are important. There's the Vanyar, the Noldor, and the Teleri. And this story focuses very much on the Noldor.
Okay.
The Noldor are the most important, and the most important guy, his name is Feanor, because he creates the Silmarils, which is what the Silmarillion is named after.
I was gonna be like, that sounds familiar. Yeah.
So the Silmarils are these three jewels, essentially, that he kind of like creates. So it's very interesting in Tolkien, because like in The Lord of the Rings, it's like, okay, the ring is evil. And in Tolkien, there's very much this theme of worshiping objects and those objects betraying you. And so everyone loves these Silmarils so much and covets them so much, including Melkor, who gets released at a certain point, which is not a great idea.
That happens sometimes.
So Melkor eventually kind of poisons all of the Noldor against the Valar, the gods, and convinces them that they're like, you know, conspiring against them and trying to keep them from having dominion over the earth.
I was worried that he actually poisoned them.
He doesn't actually poison them.
That's
he
good.
Just, he like, you know, he's very Loki / devil like.
Gotcha.
So eventually Feanor kind of becomes separated from the rest of the Noldor and they don't really like each other. And it's very complicated. There's lots of names that begin with F.
Sure.
Cool. There's Fingolfin and Finarfin.
Fingolfin.
Yeah, Fingolfin. That's also what I want to name my child.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. We'll talk. You can talk me out of it later. Fingolfin, Finarfin are the brothers of Feanor. They all have children. Feanor has 7 sons.
Always a good number.
Something's going to happen to that family.
Yeah.
The seventh son ends up a werewolf usually.
Yeah.
Or the chosen one. It's a weird combo.
Interesting. Interesting. Things don't go well for Feanor and his 7 sons.
Yikes.
So basically he decides to lead all the Noldor back into Beleriand, or like, you know, the earth where the main action happens, away from the Holy Land, away from Valinor.
Gotcha.
And he unfortunately...
dies?
No, he kills a bunch of the Teleri.
Got worse.
Who are the sea elves?
Oh no!
He killed
to steal their boats.
No, just
and
steal
so,
the boats.
Yeah,
just
so,
perform a rap song and say thank you and then leave.
And then it gets worse too. So he and his 7 sons, not all of whom are like down with what he's doing. They take the boats and they go across the sea and they land on, you know, the Beleriand in Earth where they're going to, you know, start to live. And they're like, cool, so should we send the boats back now to bring the rest of our people over? And he's like,
nah,
we're going to
burn. Fuck them.
We're going to, yeah. And so many of his sons are like, oh shit, that sucks, kind of. Yeah, and by this point, Melkor, who is now named Morgoth,
what? Because why not?
Because why not?
Is Morgoth the giant fire guy?
So that's a Balrog of Morgoth. And so Balrog.
Listen, I knew a thing.
Yeah, totally. You remember?
Julia was like, I'm sorry.
No, if you remember, Orlando Bloom in in most of the Lord of the Rings movies always states the obvious. So in the first in the first movie when they're in Moria underground and he's like, it's a Balrog of Morgoth. And
audience surrogate Orlando Bloom.
Totally. Okay. Oh, let's backtrack a little bit. Galadriel is one of these first elves. She's one of the Noldor.
It's the lady one.
The lady one. She's Cate Blanchett.
Gotcha. Very important, so, actress, because otherwise I wouldn't picture it.
Yep. And so she's one of those elves, and she comes, you know, she's one of the ones that gets left behind after he burns the ships. Right. Feanor burns the ships. She and a bunch of the other Noldor, they decide to walk across like this land of ice to get into Earth. So they get to Beleriand, and like Morgoth's like, I'm going to kill you. And he doesn't kill them all, but he does. Feanor does die. The guy who made the Silmarils dies. Oh, but I forgot this part. This is the important part. There's now a curse on Feanor and his seven sons because they have vowed an oath.
Obvi.
Because
wait, hold on. Is this how we get the ring wraiths? Or
no?
I immediately go curse and then weird dudes.
Well,
and
but there's very much a parallel between this story and what happens in the Lord of the Rings.
Cool. It's textually setting precedence for the main series.
Yeah. Also, at this point, Morgoth has the Silmarils.
Gotcha.
He steals them with the first giant spider, evil lady, Ungoliant.
Of course. I'm sorry. Yeah. There's more than one?
Yeah. There's
they
Ungoliant.
They just can't keep living, Amanda. Yeah.
She's kind of a badass, too. Or she's more of a badass than Sheila because she can, like, create a cloak of darkness. Whoa. And, like, she eats light.
Amazing.
Yeah. So she eats light and that kind of feeds her and she creates more darkness from it.
Ooh.
And so she actually kills those two trees that are so important.
God damn it.
I know.
Start killing the cool Ents and trees
I know. And but Yavanna's able to like save just a little bit from the trees, and from that she makes the sun and the moon. So that's how the sun and the moon come to exist.
Imagine if the trees were still there, how brilliant and bright
that
would be.
Can you imagine? Maybe a little too bright.
It's almost like an allegory for moralism.
Yeah.
I can't really stick to the particulars of the story because I'm two gins in.
Oh,
but
that's fine.
I can definitely pick up on the like shape of it.
Well, no, and that's the important part. And like this is the thing is that like unless you're a nerd like me, like you got to go for the good stuff in this book.
But isn't that why it's cool? Like as a series, like casual readers or listeners can enjoy the fact of it. And
I think
nerds
so.
Can like dig in literally endlessly.
I really like that. And so I do want to get to the like there's a couple of really great stories in the book. That's not just like history.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, this is a heck of an episode. And Jules, I know that people who love stories are going to be loving this ep, but they can only listen to Spirit so many times. I remember maybe three or four times through the back catalog. Mm-hmm. Once they run out, what's a girl or guy or NB to do with their time?
I mean, obviously go download an audiobook from Audible.
Audible.com/spirits, in fact. Or, this is fun, you could even text spirits to 500-500 and get the URL texted to your phone.
Texting is so easy.
If you don't want to remember so many things or just want to remember numbers, just text spirits 500-500. Jules, what book are you recommending this week?
I am recommending this week The Stars Are Legion by Cameron Hurley. It is a beautiful space opera that is just angry. And like, just, it's like, it makes me feel a lot of things, but as someone who is typically described as a podcast barbarian, it is one of those.
Self-described.
Self-described as a podcast barbarian. I really, really love the way that Cameron uses rage as like a reading lens for this story. And it's all about war and memory and like moral and like gray moral ambiguity, and it's beautiful.
Our favorite stuff.
And also it's sapphic lesbian sci-fi in space.
WLW space.
Yep.
Love it.
Wonderful.
And this week I am going to recommend an awesome book, not in space, but in Harlem, called The Poet X by Elizabeth Acevedo.
Those are very different places.
Yes. She is a spoken word poet, and this is a really beautiful kind of short audiobook, just 3.5 hours, narrated by her. So you really get that beautiful like performance quality to the narrative. It's like the best of poetry with a long enough narrative that it will, you know, take several commutes or car washings or gym sessions or whatever it is that you're going to do. But it's incredible. It's like a novel that's in verse as well. So it's story, it's rhythmic, it is entrancing, and I cannot recommend it enough.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And the nice part about Audible too is, hey, if you get an audiobook and you don't like it, or the story just isn't for you or something like that, they have a great listen guarantee. So if you don't like it, you just swap it out for something new.
Yeah, you can control the speed of the audiobook. You can switch back and forth between like an ebook and the audiobook with their whisper sync for voice. And my favorite thing is that you own the book. So even if you decide to, you know, take a pause or to suspend your membership, you still own the book. You can still listen to it. It's not like a rental or streaming type situation.
Yeah, so you can get started. Just go to audible.com/spirits and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. And you can download a title for free and start listening today. It's that easy.
Yeah, or if you want, you can text spirits to 500-500 and get that link texted to you. Right on.
Right on.
Thanks, Audible, for sponsoring us.
Yeah, thanks, Audible.
And now let's get back to the journey.
The first story is the story of Beren and Luthien, which is very much the predecessor to Aragorn and Arwen.
Ooh, nice. I like the name Luthien, not going to lie.
Yes.
It's pretty cool.
Yes, Luthien. Yes. So, okay, backtracking again a little bit. When the elves first came to be,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the Teleri, the sea elves, some of them stayed behind.
Cool.
And most of them followed this one guy who now is known by Thingol.
Not my favorite.
Not
name.
The greatest.
Not
name.
The best name.
Not the
best
name. It's like you meet a really hot guy, then he's like, "Hi, yeah. I'm."
He's
Wilbur.
Kind of the and way he's like, oh. The way he's described in the book. So basically, he falls in love with one of the Maiar, who are like the lesser gods.
Gotcha.
Uh-huh.
Who
one
happens
of the wizard
to be
level
Earth.
People?
Sort of. Yeah, gotcha. And her name is Melian.
Hmm.
And
good
kind
witch
of a,
name.
Kind of a nice name.
Yeah.
She's kind of a witch. She's kind of like a forest witch.
Same.
And so they fall in love. And he becomes kind of like a silver fox, like his hair turns gray.
And so
all of his followers are now called the Grey Elves, or the Sindar.
See, I had to fan myself over right there. Like, hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my jam.
That's right.
Julia's in.
So they have this domain in kind of the center of the earth called Doriath, and Melian kind of protects their forest so that no evil can come into it.
Nice.
And they have a daughter named Luthien. And Luthien is half elf, half god, kind of.
Amazing.
Wow.
And is like so, so pretty. And really like dances and is like really pretty. When the sun and the moon are created, when the sun rises for the first time, that's when the men wake up. That's when humans wake up.
Gotcha.
Ruh-roh.
And so elves don't die unless they're like killed.
Yeah.
Unless they're slain. But men do die.
Yeah.
And we don't know what happens to them after they die. And it's
really?
Actually, yeah, it's a really kind of beautiful thing that Tolkien talks about in the book, the way he talks about the fate of men, like, and like no one knows where they go.
Wow.
Yeah. And that in itself is a gift. So I think it's kind of like,
oh shit.
Yeah.
We weren't like, prepared for this to get
I
real.
I know. It gets pretty intense.
Wow.
Like the elves, like they die, but then they go to the Hall of Mondos, the kind of Hades god. Mm-hmm. And then after like 1,000 years, they can come back to life if they want to.
Wow.
But
that seems like a sweet deal as well.
Yeah. You know, like I'm not sure. I mean, I think I would prefer like the eternal life thing. Mm-hmm. But
wow,
I like the way that Tolkien kind of talks about death and is like, it's not a curse. It can be a good thing.
It's a beautiful mystery or an opportunity.
Yeah.
Which I think is really cool.
Yeah. Some men are like, the elves are like, cool, we're down with you. And one of those is the family that Beren comes from. And there's a bunch of battles and like things are not looking good for our heroes.
Oh, no.
But somehow Beren makes it into this magical land of Doriath, the forest.
Good
where,
job, Beren.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. And he sees Luthien and he's like, oh my God, I love you.
Classic.
And I want to, yeah.
Classic.
I want to. marry you and spend all our time together.
Yep.
And so eventually she's like, yeah, I kind of love you too.
Nice.
And that but really my dad's really not gonna like this. And so they go Yikes. And talk to Thingol. Her dad.
Thingol.
Oh, poor Thingol.
You have such a good daughter's name. And then there's Thingol.
I know. There's Thingol, Melian, and Luthien. The ladies have such pretty names.
Yeah. Like Luthien as a lady, particularly. Like, fuck yeah, sign me up.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And so what I love about this story is that it's like a fairy tale romance, but Luthien is totally way more of a badass than Beren is.
So good.
And so basically, Thingol tells Beren, he's like, okay, if you want to marry my daughter, you have to go get a Silmaril from Morgoth.
That's not good.
And you can't just go to Cheesecake Factory.
You can't just get it from the Cheesecake Factory.
Nope, you can't.
We don't have the Eye of Sauron yet. Though, so at one point, he does have to fight Sauron, who is kind of like a servant of Morgoth. And actually, I believe Luthien is the one who defeats Sauron in that situation because she always does. So basically what happens is Beren goes off to get the Silmaril and he finds one of the elf friends and they kind of go on this journey together. But then they find Sauron. Sauron kind of kills everyone except Beren.
Oh, no.
And he turns himself into a werewolf.
Cool.
Whoa. Yeah, there's werewolves and vampires in this story.
What?
So I know.
It's so good.
So good.
You don't see enough of that in Tolkien in Lord of the Rings.
Sounds like personally. A miniseries.
Totally. Oh my God. This is like my life dream.
This would be the next Game of Thrones, yo.
Yeah, it totally could. It totally, totally could. She finds this kind of magical dog whose name is Huon.
Oh.
And he's her loyal, faithful servant who's also.
I love it so much.
And so, you know, she gets to ride him and find Beren. Aww. Oh yeah, she gets when Beren first leaves and she wants to go after him, of course her father like locks her in a tree.
Yeah.
And
you know, in a tree like you do when you're a half elf.
But she's magic, so she grows her hair out really long and she climbs down her
hair. She Rapunzel's herself.
Yeah, she Rapunzel's herself.
Cool.
She totes Rapunzel's herself.
Rapunzel's down the side of the tower.
Yeah.
Get it?
Like, so like dorky.
Yep, I got it.
Yep. Okay.
It. Just fucking dorky. Yep.
Just checking.
And then she finds Huon the dog and they go and find Beren.
Aww.
All of his elf friends have died. But she and like the wolves are evil and Tolkien really doesn't like wolves and he really likes eagles.
Okay.
Understandable.
Okay.
Eagles are a really big theme. But Luthien goes and basically rescues Beren because men need rescuing by
Classic.
Women.
Yep.
And
good. I'm glad Tolkien understood that.
He did. He really did. Like very much in the Silmarillion, it's very much like, yeah, you listen to the women. So then they go to where Morgoth is. Angband. No. Angband is like the first Mordor.
Whoa.
Dope.
Yeah.
I want to hang out there.
New York's hottest club.
Yeah. Is Angband.
That's like the snake hole lounge.
You need a shield to get in.
Pawnee's most dangerous, hottest club.
Yeah.
It only said dangerous.
They go to Angband and there's of course a wolf.
Gotta be.
Oh yeah, and she's dressed, she's put on the hide of a vampire. And he's put on the hide of a wolf, and that's how they're disguised. Dope.
Okay. Strong look.
Doing good.
For sure. Super goth.
truly. And then, the gothest.
Yeah.
Truly.
The most goth. And but then there's this other wolf guarding the gates of Angband, and so Luthien has to like cast a spell on him to put him to sleep. And then they go into Angband, and there they find Morgoth, who's like so much worse than Sauron. He's like so evil. And she basically is like, Beren, I got this. And she dances for him and kind of makes him fall asleep as well.
Gotcha. Right on.
So then Beren cuts one Silmaril out from his crown and he's got it. He's like, sweet. But then he gets a little too greedy.
Oh, man.
And he's like, maybe I can take two.
Don't jack in the beanstalk that shit.
Exactly. So he tries to cut the second one. The blade breaks and cuts Morgoth across the cheek and he kind of wakes up. So they're like, we got to book it. So they run. But by that point, the wolf, the like wolf guardian.
Done woke up.
He woke up. And he decides to bite off Beren's hand that has the Silmaril. And proceeds to go crazy because nothing evil can touch the Silmarils without being burned. So he's got this like holy rock. Jewel yeah. inside Whoa. Himself and is just kind of like burning from within.
Yikes.
Yeah. So this wolf goes crazy, like runs away. Baron's kind of like dying. But Luthien sucks the poison out of the wound.
She's just killing it right
now. She really is. She's such a badass. And so her dad's like, well, where's the Silmaril? And Baron's like, I have it in my hand. And he like shows him his cut off hand.
He's like, look at my stump.
Yeah, he's like, it's in my hand, I swear. My hand is just in a crazy wolf.
In the stomach of a wolf.
Yeah. And so by this point, the wolf has made its way to the magical forest of Doriath. Dope. And so Baron and a couple other people go out to hunt it, mm-hmm. including Huan the dog.
Yay,
Huan.
So cute.
Sadly, Huan.
No dog death in our podcast.
I'm sorry, but
he introduced him just to kill him.
I'm sorry. And he's got more, like, there's more stuff that happens in the story, and
he
like,
lives he, a full
all right, all right,
life.
All right.
Yeah.
Try to make lived, it better.
He went
Come
to
on.
Doggy heaven.
Okay, good. Thank you.
And
I will choose to believe that.
Yeah, well, actually, he did theoretically come from Valinor, so he probably went back there and was just
all right.
I'm a spirit dog now. And Baron is mortally wounded as well during this, and he dies.
Yikes,
buddy. But Luthien, before he dies, is like, don't go away. Don't go to the place that men go when you die. Wait for me.
Aww.
And so he...
That's really sweet.
It's very sweet. And also, I was reading recently that Tolkien based this story very much on his relationship with his wife,
Aww.
Who he was with from the time he was 16 to when he died.
No, take it back. Take it back.
I know. It's so... so many feelings. So basically, Baron dies, but he goes to Mondos mm-hmm. Instead of going wherever men go when they die.
Okay.
And yep. Luthien kind of falls into a swoon, and her spirit goes to him.
Cool.
And they go to Manwë, the kind of Zeus god, yeah. for mm-hmm. judgment. Because she's like, I want to, you know, save him. I want to be with him.
Mm-hmm.
And Manwë is basically like, okay, either you can stay here in Valinor and live in the Holy Realm forever, or you both can go back to Earth, but you're mortal.
Hmm.
So you're not going to live forever, and you will share in the fate of men. And she's like, I'm totes going to do the second option.
This is mm-hmm. like a reversed Disney's Hercules.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
it is.
Great.
It yeah. is. And so, and this is very much like, for those of you who have seen The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, the story of Arwen and Aragorn, like
is basically this.
It's very, very similar, gotcha. But Luthien's way more of a badass cool. than Arwen is. So
no offense, Arwen.
No offense, Arwen. You're very cool too,
and pretty,
and very pretty also. So they go back and they live as mortals.
Wow.
And eventually they do die.
All right, but like,
but
they
together
did
and
it.
In love.
But together and in love.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it's a very beautiful story. It's and this is Tolkien's kind of like fairy tale romance.
He did real good.
Yeah, he did.
I'm happy with it.
And
besides
apparently
the dog dying.
I know.
That part's sad.
There is like the Silmarillion is very, very dark, which the next big story, which is the only other big story mm-hmm. in the Silmarillion, is the story of Turin Turambar, who's the guy who has like 17 million names.
Sounds right.
I'll do Bring this one on. A little bit more succinctly because it's a little less. I mean, it's a badass story because there's dragons in it, or there's a dragon in it.
Sign me up.
Totally. So basically, Turin is a man who...
Got a lot of names.
After Baron... Yep, he's got a lot of names. After Baron, Thingol is like, I like men. So...
Can't get over Thingol.
Phrasing.
Can't get over Thingol. Super
and,
in.
Yep. And so Turin gets to go live in Doriath with Melian and Thingol and... Can't every time.
So good.
But so he does, but he grows up and just kind of like everything goes wrong with
Aww.
Him. And his father is being held captive by Morgoth. And basically Turin, like, he's such a boy. Like, you know, he gets into a fight and he like throws a glass at this guy.
Oh no.
And then the guy is like follows him the next day and is like, why'd you do that? Like, fight me. And the guy and so Turin like strips him naked and chases him, and the guy eventually is so scared that he like falls and falls to his death. And Torrin's like, oh shit, I should probably leave.
Falls.
Yeah, and he should, and so he goes and he joins like this band of outlaws. Typical, you know, like join a gang, yeah. You know, like, you know,
become
he's
a highwayman.
He's just a bad boy. Yeah, yeah.
Get and, much tattoos.
Yep. And then he kind of like takes over this dwarf's house.
Don't do that.
Like, yeah, he like lives with this
dwarf.
I know.
My takeaway here is poor dwarves.
I know. Dwarves really get the short end of the stick,
apparently.
In this
short end of the stick,
because they're short.
poor dwarves.
Turin has this one elf friend who comes and follows him, but he ends up killing him by mistake, and like everything goes wrong for Turin.
No.
He also has a sister, but he hasn't seen his sister or his mother for like 20 years.
Is he gonna fall in love with the sister accidentally?
Uh oh.
Yes.
It's gonna be a Star Wars.
It's gonna be a Star Wars.
I like to think of it a little more like pre Game of Thrones. Like, this is kind of like the more tame version of Game of Thrones.
I'm sorry. Why haven't I ever called a Game of Thrones release night party pre-Game of Thrones?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
We fucked up, my friend.
We have one season.
We have one more chance.
Well, no. Maybe? I mean, we could do it before all of the episodes.
That's true.
You have seven more chances?
I think so.
That's true.
Once Game of Thrones is done, I'm gonna do my Silmarillion miniseries.
Hell yeah. I'm here for it.
Good at us.
So he kills his elf friend by mistake. He goes and lives with, and you know he's already given himself another name by this point. He goes and lives with other elves, and he gives himself another name.
I now get why he needs the multiple names, because of the multiple crimes.
Exactly. Yeah, he tries to put everything behind him.
He's going full Catch Me If You Can.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Yeah, or like Name of the Wind, which is a series of manifold fuck-ups based on ego.
Yep.
And a guy trying to
quietly outlive them. I love that series.
It is real entertaining.
It is very entertaining. The dragon comes to where he is. The dragon puts a spell on him.
Whoa.
The dragon also puts a spell on his sister and his mother. His sister kind of forgets, like, she loses her memory and can't talk anymore.
That sucks.
Turin finds her, not knowing who she is, and kind of teaches her how to speak again and, like, kind of takes her in under his wing.
Ruh-roh.
They fall in love, but what kind of love? And then he goes out.
Friendship love.
One-sided love based on power differentials.
Well, no. In theory, she loves him back. But then the dragon comes back and Turin's like, I gotta go fight the dragon. And secretly, her name is Nienor, but he calls her Niniel. You know, close.
Yeah. Okay.
Close.
Okay.
Same, but different.
I'll allow it.
She follows him and he kills the dragon, but kind of, like, when he kills the dragon, the dragon's blood spurts on him and kind of, like, sends him into a swoon.
Yeah.
Whoa. And so he kind of falls asleep.
I love the swoon.
Yeah. So many swoons. Turin has fallen asleep on his sword.
Ooh.
Yes, I left that part out, but he fell asleep on top of it. Not, like, in him, but, like, just on top.
We were worried.
Yeah. Not yet.
Whew.
So then Nienor comes, and the dragon is dying. His name is Glaurung. But before he dies, he wakes up and he releases her from her spell and gives her back her memory.
And now she feels all fucked up.
So now she knows that she married her brother and is carrying her brother's child.
See, that's a shitty last thing for that dragon to do.
Yep. The dragon's pretty evil.
Yeah, they usually are.
And at least in Tolkien.
Yeah.
Not in Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah, in other genres, we're cool, but dragons are douchebags in Tolkien.
Yeah.
And Harry Potter, they're just like, I'm a toddler, let me go.
Yeah. I think Harry Potter dragons are the best dragons.
I have a large animal. Why are you fucking with me?
I know.
Yeah.
Let me sleep.
And, you know, you kind of piss them off.
Don't take my eggs.
And they, you know, spit fire on you. So she's made aware of what... of who she is
she
again.
She done fucked up.
So she jumps into this cavern.
Yeah.
Or this, like, kind of waterfall kind of thing. And she dies.
No!
Yeah. Yep.
It's like the Oedipus thing.
Why did Tolkien think about this?
Oedipus is definitely
inspiration
for this story.
Inspiration?
Incesperation?
Yeah.
Ooh!
Emma. Wow.
Well, she did it first. I just said
she,
it louder.
She just said it more distinctly than I did, which is fine. Take the credit.
Yeah. And there's this guy who overhears all this, which is important because Turin wakes up because he didn't die. He was right. just in a swoon.
He's just a convenient commoner.
Yeah, exactly. And so the guy, well, he's in love with Nienor. It's very
Someone
sad.
A little late, my dude.
Yeah, it's a little be. it's a little sad. Turin wakes up and this guy tells him and everyone what he saw.
No.
Turin doesn't believe him and kills him.
Turin, no.
He just makes all that, like, his heart's in the right
Every
place, but he makes so many bad decisions.
Like Achilles.
Make yep. a choice and yep. then do the opposite.
He's the classic tragic hero.
Yeah.
And in many ways, this story is the most interesting to me because it doesn't, like, it's not crucial to, like, the overall arc of the story. It's
right.
just, like, this kind of fucked up story in the middle
like
of...
human beings, y'all. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That cute little soap opera in the middle of all of the world building and plot related stuff.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. Nice. So, but eventually Turin finds the guy who was with his sister when she went crazy and when the spell was put on her. And he's
right.
like, yeah. And she like, she woke up and she couldn't remember who she was and she ran away.
Confirmation.
And, yeah. And so he was like, oh fuck. Like that. I did marry
up.
My sister. And so he falls upon his sword.
Yeah.
And so his name, the only important other name that he has is Turimbar. And that means master of fate.
not so much.
Master
yeah, not so much.
Not
so much. So,
by fate.
So what I love is, well, yeah. So this is one of the few things that I remember how to say in Elvish, because I think it's, I forget who says it about him, but it's like Turin Turimbar, a Turin Umbartanen, which means a master of fate. By fate mastered.
I was like, there's definitely a pun in there just
yep.
from the way it was
that,
structured.
Yeah, exactly.
Good parallel construction.
Exactly. So that is the story of Turin Turimbar. And
wow.
If you don't want to read the whole Silmarillion, you can read that separately.
Yeah.
Because Christopher Tolkien, J.R.R. Tolkien's son, released a book called The Children of Húrin.
Cool.
Húrin's their dad. And so you can Aww. Just read this story as a separate book.
Nice.
Also, apparently, he released Beren and Lúthien recently.
Cute.
I still haven't bought
Picked
that book.
Yet.
I haven't gotten it. Haven't gotten around to it.
That was less of a roller coaster than a like toboggan straight to tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a
much.
Tragedy toboggan.
It's just a tragedy toboggan. It's like if you feel like you want to be sad. Read this story.
If you're feeling a little bit too optimistic about the world.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit like newly in love, you know, like newly just happy.
Yeah.
Just treat yourself with one of these.
Totally. So everything that happens after that is like very quick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important. Many other elven kingdoms are destroyed by Morgoth. One guy, Erendil, who's mentioned in The Lord of the Rings, is
yeah.
able to make it to Valinor and be like, please, please, please save
Do
the
something
world.
About this asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the Valar are like, okay, because you asked. And so so they basically come in and they fix everything. The one thing that I wanted to mention for those of you who are Lord of the Rings fans, Erendil is also half elf, half man
mm-hmm.
from a different lineage. And then he marries Elwing, who is like she's the granddaughter of Beren and Lúthien.
Cool.
Ooh.
They together have Elrond and Elros. So you remember
Ooh.
Elrond
yeah.
from Lord of the Rings.
Not Elrond Hubbard, but Elrond.
No, Elrond. Like the Council of Elrond, that super long scene
yeah.
in The Fellowship of the Ring.
I got
cool.
you.
Elrond and his brother Elros are given the choice of whether they want to be elf or man, if they
Ooh.
Want to be immortal or have this like weird mortal
yeah.
life. Elrond decides to be an elf.
Obviously.
He has Arwen, who yep. we see later. She's his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Elros decides to be a man, but they, but he kind of founds Numenor, which becomes this very Atlantis-esque land of men in the Second Age.
Cool.
And so there's a part in the Silmarillion at the end, after the Silmarillion, that's called Akalabeth, which is about the downfall of Numenor.
Mm.
But from Elros comes Aragorn.
Hey,
so technically,
that's a name I know.
Technically, if you think about it, Arwen
they're
and Aragorn
like second cousins or something.
They're like kind of like 50th cousins or more than that.
Like grand cousin or something.
Yeah, like there's 500 years of men between Elros and Aragorn. Right.
Distant relatives.
Maybe 1,000 years of men between them or something like that. Yeah. Whereas Arwen was born like right.
Gotcha.
So she's like way older than him. But anyway, I just think that's kind of fun.
That's pretty awesome. Little.
By the end of the story, Melkor is pushed into the outer confines of the world.
Whoa.
So he can't come back. Get him out of here.
Goodbye.
But Sauron's still around. They couldn't find him. They couldn't find him. He's the one who brings about the downfall of Numenor, and as we learn later, creates the Ring of Power and fucks shit up. And Frodo has to come and to destroy him.
Yeah, the hobbits.
Go hobbits.
Our small boy.
Our small little boy. The Silmarils all end up in a different place. One of them ends up in the sky, one of them ends up in the sea, and one of them ends up in the earth.
Classic. Nice.
Galadriel is the only one of the like main Noldor who came over from Valinor who survives.
Whoa.
Yeah. So
interesting.
It's very interesting. So yeah, that's a not so brief, but still
but briefer than the actual book.
Briefer than the actual book.
I feel like this is me and Julia like bribing our parent or badass babysitter for one more story before bedtime. Mm-hmm. And then an hour later we're like, what?
Yeah.
Like the best thing of all time.
You indulge me and I appreciate that.
We loved it.
Yeah. We're gonna have great dreams.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, they're gonna be cool and full of treants and
like dwarf smithery.
Yeah.
And giant eagles.
And wave riding elves.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So good.
Swan boats.
Oh, those swan boats.
And
man,
don't forget Thingol.
Fucking Thingol. Fucking Thingol.
Thingol. Ugh.
Silver fox.
Every choice is wrong.
Yeah.
Well, all the choices right except for his name, honestly.
Yeah.
Silver
yeah.
fox.
Turin's the one whose every choice is wrong.
Yes, that one.
Correct.
I already forgot the name.
Exactly. Imagine that times like 100 and that's the Silmarillion.
You are a scholar.
Thank you. Maybe I should go back to school for this.
Or just publish a lot on the internet and people will start to believe you're an expert. That's my strategy.
You're a genius.
All right. So, Emma.
Yes.
Is there anything you would like to plug?
Oh, I guess. Yeah. So,
this will go up likely in like December, January.
By this point, Wolf 359 might be done, but which is scary. But that doesn't mean you can't listen to it. If you haven't listened to Wolf 359
before, binge the shit out of it.
Yeah, so it's a sci-fi audio drama series that takes place 7.8 light years from Earth, circling the red dwarf star Wolf 359.
Hey.
And I play the mission commander, Renee Minkowski.
Who I just like identify with on a spiritual level.
Oh, good. Oh, good. I'm so glad.
Where I'm just like, if everyone listened to me, there would be no problems.
Exactly. That's sort of Minkowski's plight in life.
I love it.
So there's that. And then by the time that this releases, I should have launched my own podcast.
Woo-woo. Yeah.
Which I believe is going to be called Pairing.
Use the present tense, yo. Let's make it into
being. It is called Pairing. And it exists. And it's a podcast. It's a podcast.
It exists and it's wonderful.
Thank you.
It has 100 five-star reviews on iTunes.
And I'm being courted for
all the awards.
All the awards.
The Podskers.
The
podcast Oscars.
Why has no one made the Podskers yet, Amanda?
Because I've never accessed as part of my brain before.
Well, you know, Wool 359, we were nominated for a Webby Award, which is part of the Oscars of the internet. So
only because they got there first, not because they're good.
Yeah, exactly.
But still prestigious.
And it's a podcast, somewhat similar concept, in which I pair wine with like books and movies and art and various other things.
Amazing.
And if we haven't guest starred yet, we will soon.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for coming.
Oh my God. It's such a pleasure. Thank you for indulging me.
So much Tolkien stuff. It was great.
Thank you for indulging me.
Thanks for being our nerd father.
Thanks for being our nerd fairy godmother, Emma. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
And remember, y'all,
stay creepy.
Stay cool. Spirits was created by Amanda McLaughlin, Julia Schaffini, and Eric Schneider, with music by Kevin McLeod and visual design by Allison Wakeman.
Keep up with all things creepy and cool by following us on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, and Instagram at Spirits Podcast. We also have all our episodes, collaborations, and guest appearances, plus merch on our website, spiritspodcast.com.
Come on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/spiritspodcast, for all kinds of behind-the-scenes stuff. Throw us as little as $1 and get access to audio extras, recipe cards, director's commentaries, and patron-only live streams.
And hey, if you like the show, please share us with your friends. That is the best way to help us keep on growing.
Thank you so much for listening. Till next time.